All right, so if y'all are familiar with Matthew 24, this is a challenging chapter. And so there's, I'm going to kind of put a frame around the scope of what I'm going to look at. There is prophetic language in it, and I am not going to attempt to reconcile all prophetic language in the Bible in one go. What I'm going to do is look at this one conversation. What had happened immediately beforehand in the temple and then coming out, and then this one conversation with Jesus and his four apostles, and try to look at it just within that scope of what would the apostles have heard, and using all three accounts in the Gospels, and what can we glean from this scope. Again, there's a lot more outside that we could try and look at, but that's bigger than for today. So what I want to do is start with actually back in Matthew chapter 23. Get a quick running start. Jesus had been teaching in the temple, and the Pharisees and Sadducees had come up and they'd asked him questions, trying to tempt him, test him. They wanted to trap him in his words, really, so they could turn him over to the Roman governor and say, look, he said this, deal with him. And that was why they asked if it was lawful to pay taxes. And so in all their questionings, they couldn't trap Jesus. In fact, he turns the questions back around on them afterwards, asking them, who is the son? Who's Christ? Whose son is Christ? And he gives them scriptural reason why it's not just as simple as answer as David, because elsewhere in the Psalms, David refers to the Christ as the Lord. And then they puts everybody to silence. And then in chapter 23, he is going to go through and pronounce this refrain or this pattern of woe. Woe upon the scribes, the Pharisees, and the hypocrites. And so who we're talking about is individuals who are purporting to be in God's service. They're claiming to be about his business. They take on the name of his followers. They are overtly religious in all that they do. But from John the Baptist coming and again to Jesus, he really calls them out on their pretense, their pretending. That's what the word hypocrite means. It's like an actor on the stage. They're playing the part, but it's not genuine. And so you have these religious leaders who claim to be serving God, but here the Christ is there, and they have just looking for ways to destroy him. They'd already communed among themselves, come up with an idea of after he'd raise Lazarus from the dead, that this guy needs to die. Otherwise, all of Israel is going to believe that he's the Christ. And if he's the Christ, well, that means he's king. And if he's the king, then the Romans are going to get really upset that we're claiming we have our own king. And they will come and they will destroy our country. And they'll take away our position as leaders, because the religious leaders had a lot of power in this society. Again, under the Roman rule and martial law, they were kind of the next iteration. So they had already agreed that they were going to kill him. And so what I want to read in particular here is starting in Matthew 23 to get us a running start into 24 is, woe unto you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, because you build the tombs of the prophets and garnish the sepulchres of the righteous, and say, if we'd been in the days of our fathers, we would not have been partakers with them in the blood of the prophets. So what had happened in the Old Testament? God sent prophets unto his people. They would be told basically to repent, to stop, doing the things that disobey God, stop committing idolatry, faithfully serve God. And more often than not, it was a really dangerous occupation to be a prophet, and they would be killed. And so these pretenders in this day and age are going to the spots where those prophets are buried, and they're building like fancy mausoleums, and they're acting like, well, if we'd been back then, we would not have done it. We would not have killed them. We're better than that. And Jesus says, you're by your own words in the days of our fathers, wherefore by ye be witnesses unto yourselves that you're the children of them which killed the prophets. He says, you acknowledge that those are your fathers. All right. Fill up then the measure of your fathers. Interesting expression. The measure, that which it should be meted out to your fathers. And that's the judgment, the wrath for killing, God's servants that were sent to him as his messengers. He says, you're going to fill up that measure. And then he calls them, ye serpents. A snake, ye generation of vipers. That's a poisonous snake. This is some really strong language. God speaking to these people, Jesus speaking to them. How can ye escape the damnation of hell? Wherefore, behold, I send unto you prophets and wise men and scribes. Right? This is our first forward-looking language. This is something that he's going to do, right? After his death, after his ascension, there is going to be a time when there are prophets among the early church. There's going to be, you know, the apostles. There's going to be, you know, teachers and deacons, right? You're going to have these people. It says they're going to come. They're going to come, and you, this generation of pretenders, of hypocrites, scribes and Pharisees, religious leaders, how are you going to treat them? He says, you're going to kill them. You're going to crucify them. Some of them you're going to scourge in your synagogue. So to scourge is to whip. Your synagogue, that was their local place of worship. That's like, so that's like beating somebody and whipping them in church. Okay. He's like, that's how you're going to act. And then again, this is shall. This is future tense. And persecute them from city to city. Okay. Remember that big terrorist of the church, Saul, later known as the Apostle Paul, he would go not only city to city, he'd go out of the country all the way to Damascus, a foreign country, to seek out followers of Christ. So he's saying, this is what you're going to do, and why? That upon you may come all the righteous blood shed upon the earth, from the blood of righteous Abel unto the blood of Zacharias son of Berechiah. So you have Abel, that's all the way back in the beginning. You got Cain and Abel, first and second born of Adam and Eve. What happened to Abel? He was murdered by his brother. They both had offered sacrifices. One was accepted, one was not. And out of jealousy, Cain slew his brother. So you've got the first, you know, man killed for being a follower of God. It's all the way at the beginning. And then you got to Zacharias, who, whenever he was killed, they killed him in between the altar and the temple. That's a pretty narrow gap. I mean, so you're at the temple. That's where you worship God. The altar's where you burn the sacrifices. The altar's just outside the temple door. He says, you killed my prophet right there on my house, basically my land. He says, all those people that have been killed, all those prophets, it says the blood is going to come upon you, this generation. That, whoa, verily I say unto you, all these things shall come upon this generation. All right. So this is important, because this is going to help keep our context as we're going into Matthew 24. So he's pronouncing these woes, and then he's sitting there in the temple, looking at the treasury, seeing people cast in. This is when you have the widow cast in her two mites, and that was all that she had. And that leads us in, minimize that one, sorry, into Matthew 24. He's departing out of the temple, all right? He's just witnessed widow's mite. He's departing out of this temple, and his disciples want to talk about something, because the temple and the grounds around it were amazing. They were impressive. They were beautiful. It had spent, Herod the Great had spent 46 years, a lot of time, energy, and money investing in rebuilding this magnificent, structure. You know, the Solomon structure was amazing. It was destroyed. They rebuilt it when they came back from the captivity. It was not as impressive as Solomon's. And now here you've got, a third iteration where it's been just a lot of work. And so the disciples are looking at all the buildings, and it's beautiful, and they say, Master, see what manner of stones and what buildings they are. And so we're going to be looking at Matthew 24, Mark 13, and Luke 21. And I've tried to line these verses up so we can see the additional details given each one. All right. So that's what they're admiring. So Lord, these are his disciples. They're following him out of the temple. They're looking, what are they looking at? They're looking at the temple. They're looking at the city. They're looking at all the beautiful stones. It's just so impressive. And this is what Jesus says. He says, seest thou these great buildings, which you behold? The days will come which there shall not be left one stone upon another that shall not be thrown down. All right. So this is significant, because this is going to be the reference point for questions that his disciples are going to ask him in just a minute. So you're in the city, you're leaving the temple. They have this conversation, and he tells them this kind of distressing news to them, that all these great and mighty buildings that are so beautiful, there's in a time when they're just completely razed to the ground. All right. So they leave. So they go to the Mount of Olives. So you go, across the brook Kidron, the Kidron Valley, and you go up the hill across from the city of Jerusalem. Not far at all is the Mount of Olives. It's described as being a Sabbath day's journey. Not very far. It's closer than Bethany. Bethany's only like 1.7 miles, so really close. But you go up there to the Mount of Olives, and you can look down or across the valley, and you can see the temple in Jerusalem. So while they're there, he's sitting there, and his disciples come to him privately. Which disciples? Just four. Peter, James, John, and Andrew. So the two sets of brothers. James and John were brothers. Peter and Andrew were brothers. And they come to him, and they have a private conversation. Everything else that he'd been teaching the previous two chapters was public. He had been talking to the group of people around him. He'd been talking to his disciples, and then the Pharisees and Sadducees who were there too when he was upbraiding them. He's dealing with everybody in a public audience. Now we're having a conversation with just four of his apostles, right? And these are ones, same ones, Peter, James, and John, who had been able to see Jesus in his glorified form on the Mount of Transfiguration, right? So these are kind of like the inner core, if you will, of the apostles. So their question is, tell us, when shall these things be? Same language used in Matthew, Mark, and when shall these things be? Okay, if you don't have what we just looked at before, you're just reading in isolation, what are we talking about here? When are these stones going to be cast down? When will these buildings that we see, when will they be destroyed so there's not one upon each other, all right? So that's the question. Question one, when will these things be? Question two, it's only found in Mark and Luke. It's not recorded in Matthew. Question two, what shall be the sign when all these things shall be fulfilled? Again, what is of these things? That destruction of the temple, destruction of Jerusalem. Question three, found in Matthew, that's not found in the other two. And what shall be the sign of thy coming and of the end of the world? Now, you've got what shall be the sign of thy coming and the sign of the end of the world, right? So the sign relates to both of them. So we've got four distinct questions that Jesus is going to be answering in this conversation. So I'm going to rephrase those. So it's a little clearer. So I've got him over here on the right side. So you can kind of keep up as we're reading his answers and thinking about what is he addressing. Question one, when will the temple in Jerusalem be destroyed? He had said they would be. When is that going to happen? Two, what will happen when it's close to the temple in Jerusalem being destroyed? Right? How will we know it's about to happen? Right? Three, what will happen when it's close to Jesus's return? That's what they mean by a sign. You know, how are we going to know it's about to happen? And then four, what will happen when it is close to the end of the world, all right? So those are our four questions. We want to hang on to those as we're going through this, because that's what the conversation is premised on, answering these four questions. All right, so he's going to start off in all three accounts with take heed. That means be alert, pay attention, be aware, that no man deceive you. Again, context, who's he talking to? Peter and James, John and Andrew, that no man deceive you. For many shall come in my name, saying, I am Christ, and shall deceive many. And they'll be saying, I'm Christ, and the time draweth near. All right? Go ye not therefore after them. All right? So our first thing that we're going to be looking at is events that are going to be happening within the next 30 to 40 years. He says there are going to be people who claim to be Christ. And, you know, we've heard the term antichrist. That means an opponent of Christ. This is a pseudo Christ, a false Christ. People had come before Jesus claiming to be Christ. And, you know, the Pharisees would deal with that, saying that, you know, if this was, of men, when they die, it'll come to nothing. And that is what happened to all the false Christ. But he's saying, many people are going to believe him. So just because the crowd's going after these people, you don't have to believe it too. Don't go after them. All right. So that's the instructions to the church. When the false Christ come, saying don't go after them. All right. There's also something else that's going to happen. You're going to hear of wars and rumors of wars. Now, what's the difference between an actual war and hearing about wars and hearing about rumors of wars? It's not going on right there. You're not seeing it. You're not involved. It's only there's a potential, there's rumblings, it's a possibility, but you're not actively seeing it. It's not confirmed, right? His instructions for the church in there is don't be troubled. Don't be terrified. For these things must first come to pass, all right? So this is going to happen, but there's more to happen before the end comes. And so when I've got highlighted here in blue, I'm looking at these questions. What shall happen when it's close to Jerusalem being destroyed? Those are things that are going to happen. And then when does it actually happen? I've got that in yellow, right? So that's what I think we're referring to here, is talking about that question of when are these things going to be? Well, there's going to be some things that happen first. First, you're going to have false Christs. They're going to deceive many. Then you're going to hear about wars, rumors of wars. Don't be panicked. It's not close yet. It's got to, this is have to happen. This will have to happen. Then he said unto them, nation shall rise against nation. Kingdom against kingdom, there shall be famines and pestilence and earthquakes in diverse places. In Mark and Luke, we also get and troubles, it's kind of generic, and fearful sights and great signs shall there be from heaven. And these are generic descriptions. We're not exactly sure what those translate to, but we know what wars are. Nations fighting against nation, kingdom against kingdom, right? There's actual conflict, actual battle, not just the potential for it, but it's actually going on. Famines, lack of food, pestilence, you've got illness rampant, and earthquakes in diverse places. There's going to be earthquakes all over the place, and you're hearing about it, right? Then there's a title for these things. It says, all these are the beginnings of sorrows. Things are about to get bad. But this is kind of just the starting point of it. So before this, you had the rumors of wars. Here you've got actual wars and these other events. Again, these are described as beginning of sorrows. But then Luke adds, but before all these, so we just looked at, there's going to be some other things that are going to apply to you. And so that's what we're looking up over here in my chart, saying, but before all these, take heed to yourselves. Right, again, who are we talking to? Talking to the four apostles. James and John, Peter and Andrew, take heed to yourselves, for they will deliver you up to be afflicted, to kill you. You'll be hated of all nations for my name's sake. They'll lay their hands on you. They will persecute you. You'll be delivered to the councils, right? The Sanhedrin, which was the Jewish council, is described, you know, those religious leaders. You'll be turned over to them. And in the synagogues, ye shall be beaten. He had just referenced that back in Matthew 23 when he was condemning the Pharisees, saying that you would whip his wise men and prophets and the ones that he would send in the synagogues. And he's telling, his apostles, you're going to be the ones. You're going to be arrested. You're going to be taken into prison. And eventually you'll be brought before rulers and kings. Why? For my sake, right? For the testimony of Jesus Christ, that they are a follower of him and for what he's done. And so they are going to be witnesses for him. But listen to this. It shall be for a testimony against them. Against who? Right? The same ones that he was saying that all these things would happen, and the wrath for all the prophets that had been killed before is going to come upon this generation of the Pharisees and the Sadducees, the pretenders, right? That it was going to come upon them in this generation. And that's going to be fulfilled when Jerusalem is destroyed. But there's something that's going to happen before Jerusalem is destroyed. Again, dealing with that testimony is that the gospel must first be published among all the nations. Okay. Now, we can think, hyper literally about this and say, the gospel hadn't gone to every single nation before Jerusalem was destroyed. And that's true. It didn't go to Australia or South America or whatever. But if you read over in Colossians 1:5-6, he's talking to his Colossians, says, for the hope which is laid up for you in heaven, whereof you heard of before in the word of the truth of the gospel, which is come unto you as it is in all the world. So you've got there a generic use of that. The gospel had gone beyond just the center of Jerusalem, right? Because there was intense persecution, and then the gospel spread rapidly. And then particularly the Apostle Paul, it's gotten going throughout, the Roman Empire and just spreading farther and farther. And so before Jerusalem is going to be destroyed and that wrath is going to come upon those pretenders who claim to be serving God, the message of Jesus Christ and who he is and who they've really, rejected and are going to kill shortly after this conversation, it's going to be publicly known. So that's something that's going to happen before the destruction. And then he's going to give them some instructions for during that persecution. When they lead you and deliver you up, Go ahead and settle in your hearts, not to meditate before what you're going to answer. You're going to have to appear before a king or a ruler to give a defense. Don't stress over thinking about that sermon in advance. There's been some sorry preachers in the past who've tried to use this verse as an excuse not to study before you preach. That's not what this is saying. This is saying if you're being arrested and persecuted and your life is on the line because you're a follower of Christ, he says, don't worry about that sermon. In that time, whatsoever shall be given you in that hour, that speak ye. For it's not ye that speak, but the Holy Ghost. All right. So that's an appropriate context for that. And you can see that when Stephen, one of the first deacons, he is giving just this beautiful defense of Christ. And he's going back all through the history of Israel. And he's talking in such very specific terms that, you know, he hadn't prepared for that. But the Holy Spirit gave it to him in that moment, right before he's going to be stoned to death. He said, I will give you a mouth and a wisdom which all your adversaries shall not be able to gainsay nor resist. All right, so over here on the right-hand side, we've got events that are happening. Again, we've got rumors and wars. We've got false Christ. And we talked about the beginning of sorrows. Those haven't started yet, because before then, we're going to have this period of intense persecution, particularly the apostles. Gives instruction on how to handle that. But then there's also going to be a breakdown within the church and within families that's going to occur. Then shall many be offended. Well, why? Because this persecution, this is too hard. I'm gonna depart. I don't want this anymore. And what's going to happen is they'll start betraying one another, because to be a follower of Christ during this persecution is a death warrant. And so you say, well, no, I'm not one, but my brother is, go arrest him. Brother shall betray brother to death. My father is, go arrest him. Parents, brethren, kinfolks, friend, children shall rise up against their parents and shall cause them to put to death. And some of you shall they cause to put to death. So what's going to happen during this intense persecution? There's going to be followers of Christ who are dying and they're going to be betrayed by their own, family and friends. Some of you are going to be put to death. The first one that we see being slain among the apostles is here in this conversation is James. He's Herod, different Herod that built the temple. This is Herod Agrippa. He's going to take him, arrest him, and slay him with a sword. And when he saw that it pleased the Jews so much, he arrested Peter and was ready to do it to him too. But he was going to hold him until, near the Passover, so he could, bang for his buck when all everybody's gathered together. But that was when God sent an angel and released Peter. Just took him out of the jail, and Peter just thought he was in a trance until after, the iron gates had opened up and he'd walked out, free into the city, and then came to himself. He goes, oh, this is real. And so this is, this is going to start to be fulfilled pretty shortly after Jesus's ascension. What else is going to happen in the church? Many false prophets shall arise and shall deceive many. So we talked about false Christ. There's also going to be false prophets. And because of iniquity shall abound, the love of many shall wax cold. Right? So the love that people had first expressed for Christ, because of sin, because of persecution, there's going to be a departure from it. And how are you going to be treated? You're going to be hated of all men for my name's sake. You're going to be hated by the Jews. You're going to be hated by the Gentiles. You read Paul's list of all the troubles that he goes through, dangers from without, dangers from within, cares for the church, all this, you're going to be hated, right? This is a really rough pep talk, right? You're getting this message from Jesus to you as your four apostles. It's going to be awful. You're going to be hated. They're going to kill you. They're going to beat you. But here's the good news. There shall not a hair of your head perish, right? Worst thing they can do is kill you. And you're in the presence of the Lord. In your patience, possess your soul. He that shall endure unto the end, the same shall be saved, right? He's reassuring them that, regardless of all this, it doesn't change what he's going to do, and that they will be safe and with him, even though this world, this life will be very unpleasant for them. He's not hiding the ball. And this gospel of the kingdom shall be preached in all the world for a witness to all nations, and then shall the end come. All right, so we talked about that. The gospel is going to be preached, right? It's going to go out into the world, and then the end shall come. Right? Again, that yellow, I'm still looking at that as the end being a reference to Jerusalem. And so we kind of had stage one of the false Christ and the rumors of war. Then we'd alluded to stage two, which he described the beginning of sorrows, when you have actual wars, famines, pestilence, earthquakes. And then there's what I'm going to call stage three, but there's going to be a particular sign to let you know that the end, that destruction of Jerusalem, is about to happen. We know that based on what he tells the church to do. When you therefore see the abomination of desolation spoken of by Daniel the prophet stand in the holy place, whosoever readeth, let him understand. Okay. That is not super clear to me. Let's see what Mark says. When you see the abomination of desolation spoken by Daniel the prophet standing where it ought not, let him that readeth understand. Again, same thing, but not super clear. Verse 20 of Luke. And when you see Jerusalem compassed with armies, then know that the desolation thereof is nigh or near, right? You've got this same pattern in the conversation, and you've got two prophetic allusions taking you back to Daniel, referring to something about a destruction that's about to happen, an abomination, right? And here you've got a reference to compassed with armies. Well, we know that in 70 AD, the Roman army, a Gentile army, is going to besiege Jerusalem. And you can read Josephus. He was a Jewish historian who's basically there. It's like an eyewitness account and describes what happened in the city and outside of the city and how the city is going to be razed to the ground. But their question was, what is the sign that is about to happen? Here's the sign. When you see Jerusalem is compassed with armies, when it's surrounded by armies, then you need to know that its destruction is super close, right? Wars and rumors of wars, or just rumors of wars, don't be terrified. It's still got ways to go. Wars, earthquakes, pestilence, all right, we're getting closer. But when you see Jerusalem compassed with armies, Bubba, it is time to go. And that's exactly what he says. Let them that are in Judea flee to the mountains. All right. Judea is the whole region around Jerusalem. So this is talking to believers there who are going to be close to Jerusalem. He says, tell them that when they see that, they flee. All right, how urgently do they need to flee? If you're working on the top of your house, and houses typically were flat and they had additional stuff up there, he says, don't go down to go into the house to pack up anything. Just go. If you're in the field and you're working without your shirt on, don't go back home to get your clothes. Go, right? This is like super urgent, right? This is the house is on fire. Don't go get the emergency documents and your car keys and everything. Just get out, right? Let them that are in the midst of it depart out. Well, what's the it? The desolation thereof. What's thereof? Jerusalem. When you see Jerusalem compassed with armies, that's the final sign that the destruction is about to happen. So if you're in the middle of Jerusalem, what's the instruction? Leave them that are in the countries. All right, so if you're round about Jerusalem, don't go in. For these be the days of vengeance, that all things which are written may be fulfilled. All right, the days of vengeance. Well, he had referenced back in 23 that it was going to come upon this generation of the scribes and Pharisees. All the blood of the righteous is going to come upon them. Here, this is the fulfillment. And if you read after that, there's also going to be an allusion to Jerusalem. Oh, Jerusalem, Jerusalem. All right. So it's going to be very dramatic. And there's also going to be this language that's very specific to the people at that time. Woe to them that are with child. So if you're pregnant, if you're nursing an infant, it's going to be hard to flee. Pray that your flight be not in winter, right? Because it's harder to flee. Nor on the Sabbath day, because it's harder to flee. For then shall be great tribulation, for in those days shall be affliction, for there shall be great distress, where? In the land. Such was not from the beginning of the creation, when God created unto this time, neither shall be, and wrath upon this people. All right, so this is the worst judgment that God is going to rain down upon Israel and upon his people, the Jews. Jesus came unto his own, and his own rejected him. Did all reject him? No. But there's going to be a mass rejection. And so his followers, his believers, are given a clear warning. Here are the events leading up. Here it's getting close. Here is the panic button. You need to leave right now. So they're not caught up in all this, because this is going to be really super bad. Worse from the beginning. And it's not going to be another one upon Israel that's this bad. And so it's a distress in this land and wrath upon this people. What's going to happen? They're going to fall by the edge of the sword. Okay, they're going to be killed. They'll be led away captive into all nations. And Jerusalem shall be trodden down of Gentiles until the time of the Gentiles be fulfilled. And except the Lord has shortened those days, no flesh should be saved. But for the elect's sake, whom he hath chosen, he hath shortened the days. All right. So this time period of wrath and destruction on Israel, there's a certain amount. It's going to happen. Jerusalem's going to be trodden down. And he's limited the days, so it's not just ongoing. Nobody survives. He says, but for the elect's sake, he is going to lengthen the days. He's going to shorten the days. All right. So all that is fulfilled. The days of vengeance, also called the great tribulation, all that has been fulfilled. In 70 AD, that's what happened. Roman armies surround, temples destroyed, the cities wiped out. And for 2,000 years, despite a lot of people desiring it, God has not permitted that temple to be rebuilt. The manner of serving him under the Old Testament Levitical law, with priests sacrificing things there at that particular spot, the only spot they had been authorized to sacrifice, he has taken that away. Okay? It is the putting away of the old. And so we are into completely into the church age of worshiping Jesus as he instructed, not trying to follow the pattern of the Old Testament law anymore. All right. So, again, my best understanding is now we're going to be looking forward at those other two questions, right? So, when will the temple be destroyed? What will happen when it's close? Last two questions are, what will happen when it's close to Jesus' return? And what will happen when it's close to the end of the world? All right, so forward looking, you're going to be, then if any man say unto you, lo, here is Christ, or there, believe it not. All right, so we had false Christ warned to the apostles that this is going to happen before the destruction of Jerusalem. It's going to continue to happen, right? It continues to happen today. I mean, you get crazies who are trying to get people to drink Kool-Aid and trying to say, oh, Christ is here, or false Christ or false prophets. Now this one is notable, that for there shall arise false Christ and false prophets, which shall show great signs and wonders. If it were possible, they shall deceive the very elect. All right. So this is not your sideshow barker, the guy who does the sleight of hand, to impress you. And this, I'm not going to try and synthesize everything, but if you read in Revelation, where you're talking about those who claim to be Christ and those who are the prophets of that one and false prophets, right? They were given power, power from Satan, right? And they had the ability to do miracles, okay? Distressingly so, because there's many people who are going to be deceived by it, right? So the warning, all right, for our age is that if any man say unto you, here's Christ or there's Christ, don't believe it. There's going to arise many false Christs, many false prophets. They're going to do wonders so much if it was possible they'd believe, God's very children will believe. He says, but I'm telling you they're going to do this so that you're on guard and that you're warned so you're not deceived. So what will they say? If they say, he's in the desert, don't go after him. Don't go to the desert. He's in the secret chambers. If Christ is in the secret, you come follow him. Don't believe him. He says, why? Because when Christ returns, it is going to be a very public event, all right? For as the lightning cometh out of the east and shineth unto the west, so shall the coming of the Son of Man be, all right? I don't have to invite you to my backyard to see the lightning, all right? If you're looking up, anybody can see the lightning from side to side of the sky. It's not reserved in one special place, and you don't need a man to invite you to see it, all right? It's going to be a very public event. What else? It's also compared to, for wheresoever the carcass is, there will the eagles be gathered together. Okay, what does that mean? Well, you ever seen roadkill? You see a big deer, you may not see the animal itself, but what can you see above it? You see buzzards circling around, right? Is that a private event? No, everybody can see those buzzards. Wheresoever the carcass is, there will the eagles be gathered together, right? So two illustrations that these false ones are going to say, you need to come do something so you can see. He's saying, no, this is going to be a very public event, all right? All right, so immediately after the tribulation of those days. Remember, we've shifted to a different conversation here. We've addressed the destruction of Jerusalem, and now we're into things that are going to happen after that. But in those days after that tribulation, so I think this is referring to some of that language in Revelation about additional difficulties, to put it mildly, that will occur at the end of the world. There's going to be some major signs leading up to Christ's return. Right? And this is the same in all three. All right, what are those major signs? The sun shall be darkened. Okay. Now, people get panicky over eclipses and, you know, solar flares and other silly things like that. I don't think we're talking about a blip. I think we're talking about something permanent. Revelation 8:12, again, not trying to synthesize everything, but for this point, fourth angel sounded, and the third part of the sun was smitten, and a third part of the moon, and a third part of the stars, so that the third part of them was darkened, and the day shone not for a third part of it, and the night likewise. Okay? So if you lose the magnitude of a third of the sun on an ongoing basis, right? This is sun, same for the moon and the stars. The stars fail, fall. Stars shall fall from heaven. Joel 2:30-31, I will show wonders in heaven and earth, blood and fire and pillars of smoke. The sun shall be turned into darkness and the moon into blood before the great and terrible day of the Lord shall come. All right. So this is big, major demonstrations, not itty bitty little blips. All right. So sun's darkened, moon's darkened, stars are falling. What else? Upon the earth, distress of nations with perplexity. This perplexity has the idea of there's no way out. The seas roaring, the seas and the waves roaring, and men's hearts failing for fear and for looking after those things which are coming on the earth. All right, so they're looking ahead, trying to figure out what's coming, because you got all these magnitude of things coming, and their hearts are just distressed. You got some similar language over here in Isaiah 9:13. Behold, the day of the Lord cometh, cruel both with wrath and fierce anger, to lay the land desolate. He shall destroy the sinners thereof out of it. For the stars of heaven and the constellations shall not give their light. The sun shall be darkened and is going forth. The moon shall not cause her light to be seen. I will punish the world for their evil and the wicked for their iniquity. I will cause the arrogancy of the proud to cease and lay low the haughtiness of the terrible. I will make a man more precious than fine gold, even the man with golden wedge of Ophir. Therefore will I shake the heavens, and the earth shall remove out of her place in the wrath of the Lord of hosts in the day of his fierce anger. So you've got language is going to be written after, with the revelation given to the Apostle John. You've got language from Isaiah and Joel, which is, you know, 700 some odd years before Jesus, saying these are going to be the major events that are occurring before he comes back. The powers that are in heaven shall be shaken. All right. So those are the things. What's going to be the signs before Jesus' return? You got these. And then what else? Verse 30 of Matthew says, and then shall appear the sign of the Son of Man in heaven. Okay. What is that? I don't know. I can't find a corresponding verse to give me any more information. But after the sun and all those other things have happened, then in order, you'll have a sign of the Son of Man. Okay. And how's the world going to react to that? Then shall all the tribes of the earth mourn. And then they shall see the Son of Man coming. Again, a very public event. Coming where? In the clouds of heaven, right? Eagles are in the sky. The lightning is in the sky. They shall see the Son of Man coming in the clouds of heaven with power and great glory. Not how he came with humility when he came, you know, born in Bethlehem, and his veil, his glory and everything was veiled. This is going to be an overt display. He's not going to come alone either. He's going to come with all of his angels. But instructions to the church here in Luke 28, and when these things begin to come to pass, look up, lift up your head, for your redemption draweth nigh. And he shall send forth his angels with a great sound of a trumpet. What are they going to do? So you got that trumpet blast. They shall gather his elect, his children, from the four winds, from one end of heaven to the other, from one part of the earth to the othermost part of heaven. He's going to gather them all together, right? So that is the actual description of Christ, you know, coming, right? We still haven't answered the fourth question yet about the end of the world. And I know we're pushing on time. We may not get through it all today, but it's going to lead 24 all the way in 25 before he really answers that fully. He's going to give him a parable. All right, here's a parable. He says, look at a natural thing, a fig tree, and all the trees, really. When they begin to shoot forth their branches, they're yet tender, and they start to put on leaves. What do you know? You know that summer's near. Now, can you tell the exact date that summer starts based on a fig tree? No, but you can know that something is gathered. So likewise, when you see all these things, know that it is near, even at the door. So you got twofold that could be referencing to him coming. We can know these things are close, but also, I think more pointedly for the apostles, when you see these things, the specifics that he gave, very specific instruction for the church on what to do when they see it, you need to know that it's near, even at the door. For verily I say unto you, this generation shall not pass till all these things be fulfilled. Again, their question to him, when shall these things be? That first question, these things was referring to the destruction of Jerusalem and the sign of their coming. This generation will not pass away. And it didn't, right? You're talking, this was around 33 AD. You're talking less than 40 years. That generation was still alive when that city was completely wiped out. Heaven and earth shall pass away, but my words shall not pass away, all right? Everything about our world is temporary, but Jesus's word is permanent and secure. And so he's saying there is absolute certainty in what I'm saying. Now, but of that day and that hour, again, I think we're talking about the Son of Man here, when he returns, knoweth no man, no, not the angels which are in heaven, neither the Son, but the Father. But as the days of Noah were, so also the coming of the Son of Man be. And I'm going to shift my formatting here and just look at Matthew because there's not a corresponding verse over here. So of that day and hour, verse 37 says, as the days of Noah, so are the coming of the Son of Man. Right? That's what we're talking about. So when exactly? You don't know. Parable of fig tree. You can know kind of generally, just like you know that summer's getting close when the fig tree's leaves are starting to blossom or put out, but you don't know the exact day. You don't have to know the exact hour. It's not going to be broadcast. And so if anybody's telling you it's going to be exactly this day, they're lying. He says, look back to the destruction that happened of the world back in Noah's day. All right. That's how it's going to be again. For in those days before the flood, they were eating and drinking and marrying and giving in marriage, right? Life was going on in the world, right? The only people who were concerned with the ark was Noah and the eight people that God told to go inside. And so they were just doing their thing, eating and drinking, marrying and giving in marriage, right up until the day came, right? They knew it not until the flood came and took them all away. So also shall the coming of the Son of Man be, right? The world is going to be caught off guard, right? They're not going to see this coming. It's going to be a complete surprise to them, right? The instructions here are to God's children, to his followers, to those who believe that he is the Son of God. Okay. There shall be two in the field, one that shall be taken and the other left. Two shall be grinding at the mill, one shall be taken and the other left. All right. What are we talking about here? Well, go back up to see what happens when the Son of Man comes. All right. He shall send his angels with a great sound of trumpet, and they shall gather together his elect, all right, his children. And so the concept of being taken here is being drawn to him, and the left is to be cast aside, right? This is not a rapture that occurs well before, the Son of Man appears. This is not, an escaping of the end of the world. The only events that occur after, it's described here after gathering to him is him sitting down in judgment. That's all that we're talking about here. Right? Everything else had already preceded this event. So we've got the coming of man, verse 42, right? Instructions to you and to me. Watch therefore, for you know not what the hour that your Lord doth come. All right, that's just true. You don't know when he's coming, but what's your instruction? Watch, be alert, pay attention. But know this, he's going to give a parable, that if the good men of the house had known in what watch or when the thief would come, he would have watched and would not have suffered his house to be broken up. Therefore, be ye also ready, for in such an hour as ye think not, the Son of Man cometh. All right, so thieves don't make appointments. They don't, send you a notice saying, I will be at your house at 3 a.m. on Thursday the 13th. if they did, the homeowner would be there on the porch with a shotgun waiting to meet them, right? So the idea is that you don't know when it's going to come, and just like you don't know when the thief is going to come. But if you had been awake when the thief comes, you would have been, you know, alert and ready for it. And so the idea is for us is to don't be lulled into complacency, but recognize that the Lord's coming at his own time, and we are to be ready for that at any time. Verse 45 goes on, who then is a faithful and wise servant whom his Lord hath made ruler over his house to give them meat in due season? All right, so we got another parable here. You know, the Lord is giving, you know, a servant instructions. You take care of my household. You give them food, what they need in the right time. Blessed is that servant when his Lord, when he cometh, finds him so doing, right? He gave him instructions and he was obeying when the Lord comes. What's that instruction for you and I? Obey what he's doing so that when he comes, we'll be doing what he says to be doing. Verily I say unto you that he shall make him ruler over all his goods. But here's the warning. But if that evil servant say in his heart, my Lord delayeth his coming, and begin to smite his fellow servants and to eat and drink with the drunken, the Lord of that servant shall come in a day when he looketh not for him. That servant's not going to see him coming. And in an hour that he's not aware, and he shall cut him asunder and appoint him his portion with the hypocrites. There shall be weeping and gnashing of teeth. Now that expression, weeping and gnashing of teeth, that is a picture for hell. All right, that's used in Matthew 18, 12, 13, 42, 13, 50, 22, 13, 25, 30. And all of those is a very strong, visceral language about a casting out, about a rejection, about outer darkness. Matthew 8, 11 is dealing with the Gentiles that will be welcomed in among the family of God, but the children of the kingdom, right, those, you know, pretending Jews who rejected him, they'll be cast into outer darkness. There should be weeping and gnashing of teeth. Matthew 13, it deals with the parable of the tares and the sowers. And he's explaining that, saying that, you know, at the end, the Son of Man is going to send forth his angels, and they shall gather out of his kingdom all things that offend and them which do iniquity. So you've got that gathering of the elect, right? Gathering two, and then you've got the gathering that offend. And what shall happen to them? They'll be cast into the furnace of fire. There shall be wailing and gnashing of teeth. And the righteous shall shine forth as the sun in the kingdom of the Father. Who hath ears to hear, let him hear. Again, same concept in 47 through 49, which is about parable of gathering in all in a big net. They take the good fish and they gather them in, the bad fish they cast away, severing the wicked from the just. Matthew 22, this is the parable of the wedding, where there's someone who does not have a wedding garment. King says to his servant, bind him hand and foot, take him away, cast him into outer darkness. There shall be weeping and gnashing of teeth. Again, that's referring to Jesus's righteousness, which has his robe of righteousness has covered us. And if we have not had that covering and come to the end of the world, we are unprepared to have our conversation with the Lord. I mean, and that's a righteousness that he puts upon us, not something that we take upon ourselves. All right. So we've also got some parallel passages, similar parables being taught in the other gospels. So Mark 13 says, take heed, watch and pray, for you know not when the time is. For the Son of Man is as a man taking a far journey. He left his house, gave authority to his servants and to every man his work, and commanded the porter, the guy who keeps the door, to watch, right? The guy who keeps the door should be watching for the Lord to come back, so he's ready to open it. Watch ye therefore, for you know not when the master of the house cometh, at evening or at midnight or at the cock crowing or in the morning, lest coming suddenly he find you sleeping. All right, so this is the charge to all of us, to be alert, to be active, to be attentive, not just kind of perking up when we think, right, you're cleaning your room, your parents go away, you left the house alone, you quit cleaning your room, you play around, and then you hear the car in the drive, and what do you do? Oh, well, now I'm going to do something. Like, don't be like that. It's to be consistent. Luke 21, 34, take heed to yourselves, lest at any time your hearts be overcharged and surfeiting and drunkenness and cares of the world, so that that day come upon you unawares. For as a snare, it shall come on all them that dwell on the face of the whole earth. Watch ye therefore and pray always that ye may be accounted worthy to escape all these things which shall come to pass and to stand before the Son of Man. And what say I unto you? I say unto all, right? Instructions to the disciples, instructions for all of us. Watch. Okay. And then that leads into Matthew 25, where he's going to give some additional parables. We probably don't have time to deal with that today, so we will stop there. And we'll pick up in 25 next week.